Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. Rich Terapak, one of our reviewers, is joining us this morning, along with John Dornbach, who is the owner and chef of Bozzi Italia. John, along with his wife, Trish Gentile, have owned and operated Bozzi at 811 Highland Avenue in Victorian Village. Since 2002, the couple celebrated the restaurant's 10th anniversary in October together as well.
She's threatened, but...
We welcome John Dornbach to our Chefs in the City segment of this program. Congratulations and welcome to the table.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. It's a pleasure to be here again. And just so my wife knows, if she's listening, that we are happily married and still together after 10 years and looking forward to 10 more.
And the marriage has survived 10 years of owning a restaurant, which isn't necessarily easy. What made you go from culinary school to chefing in other people's restaurants to buying your own?
Well, I think it was just a dream. Anybody in any business, I think, wants to start out at some level and progress and see that progression pay off. When I moved back to Ohio from New York City, I had met Trish, and she was the catalyst for me moving here. And I went back to work in other people's restaurants, and it just wasn't fulfilling. And she turned to me one day and just said, you know, you really need to think about doing this on your own. And I just had never had that type of encouragement. I'd had dreams, but my wife was telling me at that point, let's do this. And I was 40 years old when we opened the restaurant. So we sort of did the plan backwards, but we put everything we had into it and bounced off each other and continued to do that in the last 10 years. And no, it hasn't been easy. And I don't think it's easy for any small business person, no matter what trade they're in. But it's hard work, but there's some real intangibles that come with that hard work. And it can't be about the money. If you're in it for the money, you need to look into something else, I think. But there's some wonderful relationships and experiences that we've reaped from that business.
Of course, though, in addition now to cooking, you're a plumber, you're a roofer, you are a builder. You're a maintenance man. Clean up snow, all sorts of things. Were you expecting all of that?
Absolutely not. That's one of the joys of ownership. And not only did we open a business, but we bought the building. When we started Bozzi, we bought this former pizza shop, and it wasn't coded for assembly, so we had to go through a rigorous process to get it up to speed, and a lot of it was done with professionals. But that was sort of where I cut my teeth on watching these guys do things, so that over the years, yeah, I had to learn plumbing really quickly and a little bit of electrical work, and roofing is my new hobby. Last week we had a man put his foot through the roof.
Oh, wow.
Fixing something, so I was a quick study in that. But again, those are life's challenges, my wife wouldn't agree, but I think they're pretty exciting. She doesn't like the idea of me up on a roof doing that kind of stuff.
But, well, fortunately, it is a one-story building.
It is a one-story building.
Well, I think part of the success of the two of you doing this is your wife's a therapist. I think that always helps. Because I think every entrepreneur restaurateur, particularly a chef entrepreneur restaurateur, needs a little therapy every once in a while.
And, absolutely. Yeah, every partnership does. And, yeah. And we work together very well.
You know my law firm. No.
I'm lucky in that respect. My wife is very patient and as creative as I am, just in other areas. And, you know, we're a great blend.
It is a very small building. How do you maximize that space?
Well, again, I was lucky to have done my culinary training in New York City, a region known for small spaces. So when we acquired the building, it was just a matter of maximizing all the space we could. And the layout was pretty much there for us. We knew it was going to be a small restaurant. But when we opened, we had 28 seats. A few months later, we managed to go back to the city and have the interior expanded for assembly to 40 through our architects helping us with square footage. And then we built an outdoor patio that
was terrific.
Tripled our space. Yeah. And really became a beautiful little sanctuary. It was a piece of property that was subdivided from the original building and was kept with the restaurant that just turned it into a beautiful place.
And that can be used, that's a three-season space?
We like to say it can go pretty much year-round. There's a couple of days like today that I don't think we'll have anybody out on the patio, but it is covered and heated, and we have the availability to roll up the sides and put out the chairs and tables any day because you never know what the weather's going to be like here in Columbus.
That does, though, I would think, pose some staffing challenges when the patio's open. As you say, you're nearly tripling the size of the restaurant. How do you make those adjustments?
That's a great question. We've trial and error. We've learned through the years. But one of the greatest things that we've accomplished is we have a real great core staff. And I think not only are old staff or new staff that's come and gone, people have really bought into what Trish and I were trying to do and the ideal of the restaurant, that it was a mom-and-pop shop, and we were trying to do our best. And if they could help us, they could learn how to do it for themselves. And I think people understand that there are going to be nights when there's too many people on, and there's going to be nights when there's not enough business to support everybody. But we're going to look at that and try to adjust it so everybody wins at the end of the week. And that, therefore, people keep coming back or they'll come in. But it is hard to staff when you don't know what the weather's going to be like, or when we're counting on an outdoor situation and rain rolls in, or the Memorial Tournament, or you know, something like that.
Or a football game.
Or a football game. It can be a big distraction for our business.
Now, as you mentioned, patio season is months off. The holidays are just behind us. How do you keep things vibrant and fresh in the wintertime?
Well, this is the time of year we really go back to work in the kitchen and look at, you know, we get to play with food and experiment on what we can possibly do for spring and summer and get it to a point where we can produce in volume. Mm-hmm. You know, almost all of the things we do in the restaurant, we've practiced. There's the big dance. It's a rehearsal to see how you get it done, how it would work, and if you could triple that. So creatively, for me, it really gets me excited this time of the year. We have to go out and encourage people to remember us, because everyone wants to come to the patio and they love the ideal of being down in the short north during the summer. It's a little bit more difficult in the winter. So we'll reach out, do a little bit more advertising. We'll get involved in some different programs and restaurant weeks. There's a big restaurant week coming up here next week.
Yeah, you guys have always been good in participating in those.
And they're wonderful ways for us to show what we do, not only to our regular customers, but people don't know about us. And just to get them to think that, hey, we're still open. And even though we're not that great big patio, the dining room is where we started, and it's 36 beautiful seats in a tiny little room that feels like someone's living room. And it still, you know, brings a smile to my face that we actually opened that and people got it.
Well, it's an intimate, romantic kind of spot.
It is. It's different. It's quirky.
How many turns can you get in an evening, or do you try to do that?
We can do about 2.5-3 turns. I mean, mm-hmm. The restaurant, we do about, in the season, we can feed about 150 people out of a small, that includes indoors and outdoors. But we only have, we're cooking on 12 burners, and we have 3 people in the kitchen cooking, and a very talented dishwasher, and an outstanding staff that has roller skates on running around taking care of everybody. But for a small building, we've really maximized it, and we've got it where we feel like we're really not trying to push people through it. But mm-hmm.
I never feel that way. Yeah.
Well,
I'm worried that you could, you know, I'm sitting around too long. I got to get up.
Well, that's very nice and conscientious of you. We don't want to make people feel like that. But it's like I said before, it's kind of a dance. You know, we just try to estimate. It's kind of like playing the stock market. You know, can we take a few more reservations? And is it gonna work for us? And it's a gamble.
Well, of course, as you described it, it is something of a dance. There are a number of staff people there. The kitchen is full. And you want to keep things moving without it making it look rushed or hurried or frantic.
Exactly. Frantic is bad.
Well, especially in an open kitchen.
Right. The one thing about Boston that we forgot to build was somewhere to hide. There's really no space to go behind the scenes and catch your breath. But again, the staff that we've put together over the years and that's been directed by our GM is just amazing. And they're battle hardened and mm-hmm. they're very well versed in the menu. People come to the restaurant not only to eat the food, I think more often to see the familiar faces, which is probably the greatest compliment a chef owner could get. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's, I like feeding people, but it's more about the relationship, and the relationship certainly goes beyond Trish and I, and it's nice to see it reflected in our customers recognizing and celebrating with our staff and remembering birthdays and things like that. It's just amazing.
That is amazing, because most restaurants of your size do a complete turnover a year, I think, in staff.
Right. It's more 100%. Of a, we're not a transaction restaurant. I mean, in some senses we are, but I think there's a real emotional connection, and it's a, just a, it feels good, and it's all I could have ever dreamed for in this restaurant. People have always said, when are you going to open another one up? You know, I would love to, but I just, you know, I don't think you could replicate what happened there. It really is, it was serendipitous, and there was just some forces working together that just really were in our favor, and I can't tell Columbus how grateful I am for that.
This restaurant is located in a small alley right behind Neal Avenue. Although people always seem to think it's very difficult to find, it really isn't that difficult. But there's a sense of it being home. Was that kind of your vision for it, be a neighborhood place where neighbors would hang out?
Absolutely. We, you know, in my career in New York and Cleveland and Columbus, before we opened the restaurant, they were in much bigger, you know, substantial restaurants. And, you know, my career was sort of on the bell curve, and we were looking for something that we could really put our stamp on. And we didn't want to overtax ourselves or reach too far. And there were several different opportunities we were looking at, and for reasons one or another, they didn't work out. And we sort of tripped into Bossy, and it just upon the first look, it was, here's a great place. The story's written itself. It's on a beautiful cobblestone alley. It's painted the most ridiculous color green. It's almost Kermit the Frog green, and it's set in a neighborhood. And we're gonna get to know our neighbors. We're gonna rely on them. They're gonna rely on us. There's a mutual. You know, we've always tried to be conscientious, and we get that. And that, you know, that really inspired me and Trish to build upon. That was a great foundation.
We're talking with John Dornbeck, who is the chef owner of Bossy Italia, along with his wife Trish Gentile. When you hit the 10-year mark, how do you keep things fresh while maintaining your consistency and those kinds of menu favorites that people come in specifically for? So you have to shake things up, but keep them the same.
Right. Well, I'm still trying to figure that out right now today. But, you know, a lot of it'll be... I'll take a bigger role in the kitchen again. In the last year, I've had some a fantastic staff. Two members of my staff are moving on and taking the next step and opening their own restaurant, which I'm very proud of. And it gave me the opportunity to take care of some of the maintenance issues over the summer. But now I get to get back in and really roll up my sleeves. It's a challenge after 10 years and to stay relevant and to keep myself motivated. But I really, really love what I do. I love my wife. She loves it when I'm happy, and I'm going to do my best to stay that way.
Yeah. And you do have to keep things original, but you also have to maintain certain dishes. You know, Barcelona would close without the scallops, and Lindy's without the angel hair pasta with shrimp, and the nut crusted chicken or whatever. And you've got to have the Parmesan creme brulee.
And the eggplant.
Which was Michael Ruhlman's favorite dish when we dragged him across probably 15 restaurants in Columbus.
I remember that. I was very flattered with that.
Yeah. Anything with schmaltz, by the way, from his new cookbook?
Not yet. But quickly, that was one thing that I learned early on. I had gotten to a point, I think in the fifth year, I was just so tired of making eggplant. I thought my creativity was stifled, and I informed my wife, Trish, that I was taking it off the menu, and she just gave me a very stern look and said, "Absolutely not. That's what people are coming here for." And that was a big lesson to learn, that it is about creativity, but it's also about consistency and reliability and able to go, you know, get something that's always going to be there. And that would have been a dark day if I'd taken it on so many levels.
Well, we wish for bright days in the future. Good luck in the next 10 years. And thank you so much for joining us, John Dornbeck.
It was a pleasure.
Is the chef owner of Bossy Italia. It's located at 811 Highland Avenue in Victorian Village. And we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And And welcome back to All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm Marilyn Smith. Joining us this morning, along with WOSU reviewer and food blogger Rich Terapak, his son Rich is also here, along with Marian Bowers Abbott, restaurant reviewer for Columbus Underground. We've just talked with John Dornbeck, who is the longtime chef owner of Bossi Italia. How important is it to you to go to a restaurant that has a reputation, that has been around for a while?
Well, it's pretty important because food doesn't get any less expensive, and you want to make sure that your investment in the meal is pays off. And if it's been around for a while, and particularly if it's chef-owned and operated, you can usually count on it being pretty darn good. It's rare that you have bad food. You might have an issue with service from time to time, but it's important. I think it's one of the reasons we're always supporting Dine Originals and Liz Lessner's stuff, and because they're on the scene. They're very careful about managing everything that goes on in the restaurant, and you don't mind putting out the dough.
But of course, you three enjoy the best of all worlds. You get to go and taste food at new restaurants for your reviews, and enjoy the old standards as well.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking professionally, my docket is filled with new places. But when it comes to the choices that I pick that involve other people, so if I'm entertaining, it's always something that a place that I already have had a great experience at, because I find that surprises are overrated. I don't want new experiences all the time. Sometimes it's nice to go back and have something that I've already loved. And since I'm responsible for making a good choice, it'd be a little downer if you bring your friends along and you've created something horrible and expensive in terms of an experience for
them. They'll never forgive
you. I know, that's you ruin your reputation.
I couldn't agree more. As much as I'm out always trying to find new places and promote new restaurants, it is great to have those certain few you can fall back on, those consistent ones where you've got a particular menu item that you love. And also, if you're entertaining and you're picking a spot and you entertaining a client or something, and you've got to have a can't-miss meal, they're great for those as well.
What do you see as you go to restaurants in terms of the winter menus? Anything surprising? It would seem to me that this must be the most difficult time of year.
There's so much that's being done with braises, for instance, that is typical, a winter menu, root vegetables, those kinds of things. It's not that difficult. I kind of like the fact that it changes. I love to have short ribs.
Well, of course, comfort food.
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
certainly a
popular. Lot of random soups. I find people put a whole bunch of stuff in soups that I necessarily wouldn't
and
have thought of, like raisins
out.
And kale. And it usually works out because they're better in a kitchen than I am. If I just put anything in a soup, it wouldn't work out for me. But chefs seem to know how to do it right.
Yeah, I mean, as far as local sourcing goes, obviously it becomes more difficult in the winter, but you can do a lot, like you said, with root vegetables. Kale's on a lot of menus right now. It's popular, nationwide. Braises in the winter. I know G. Michael's is always a great fallback for those kind of slow and low dishes. Mm-hmm. As well as Latitude 41. That's kind of a lot of what you see because that's, what's available in Ohio right now.
There are a number of special restaurant weeks. 614 is coming up. We also see Columbus Dine Originals periodically throughout the year along with Restaurant Week. Are those a draw for you?
I hide. I don't think. I usually pick somebody that's not celebrating Restaurant Week, and I go. But that's me, and I think we've had conversations before that I have a hard time with crowds, and that's when restaurants are really, really hit hard during those weeks. So
I could not agree more.
I feel less weird.
I think that for those who don't get out a lot, or you want to try something new, it's great. For those of us who are pretty familiar with restaurants already, and as part of our work, go out and try them. It's not quite as much of a draw because I don't think you're getting the very best of those restaurants on those nights. It's the same reason I don't dine out generally on Saturday nights. They can't pay as much attention to you.
Yes, this is my people.
Yeah. So, and also I think that there's just so many of them now that it just kind of the volume has drowned out the uniqueness that used to be
well,
just
must be
the
tough.
Dine Originals week. Now there's three or four of them. I can hardly keep up. I mean, when we first started doing the show 5-6 years ago, I was more of a fan of them than I have become now. Now the menus don't appear to be as challenging by many of the chefs. I think many of the chefs now regard them more as an obligation than an opportunity to get new diners into the restaurants. So I'm not as big of a fan as I used to be.
I think the big events, you know, the food and wine event and those kinds of things, to me are fun because I get to go talk to these people. I really don't go much for the food, but you get to socialize with the chefs who are working their tails off at these events. But I agree. I think it's not the best time to find the best food.
Well, except there are so many restaurants now in Columbus that you might not ever try if it weren't for these special events. In places that you
That's
just
correct.
Wouldn't think twice about.
Yeah. For the folks who aren't doing this on a regular basis, I think it does give them an opportunity to get out and try things, particularly when it's, again, not a big investment in time and money.
Yeah, I'd tell somebody else, oh, go give it a try. Look at that. 3 courses for $30. You got to go try that. Yeah. If you've never been there, I would advise someone else to do it. I just wouldn't necessarily take my own advice since I already had been to the place.
Well,
and
but how many times a week do you eat out?
For 2 or 2 to 3.
Yeah.
And that's not including, you know, drive-throughs and random pickup things. so then it's more. So my perspective would probably be different than other people's perspectives, except for the ones in this room, which are fabulous.
292-8513 if you'd like to talk with us or our reviewers, please give us a call, 292-8513. You can also email us at wosu.org/allsides. You can reach us on Facebook as well. What is with kale?
You know, I am trying to do this. Is funny. I'm obsessed with kale, but I understand that's like totally normal right now. So I don't feel too weird about it.
Yeah,
so
no, it's all over the
yeah,
place. Yeah.
Well, I thought I've been trying to do this taste test, so I thought I'll go to all the gourmet grocers and get their kale salad and see which one has the best. And so far, and this is trips, I'm driving places. So far, I've only found one place that had kale salad, and it had two. So it may be, I don't know how this is going to turn out. I thought everybody was eating kale salad.
Well,
tell me you think that too.
No, I don't.
No,
think
you don't think
I don't think it's always kale salad. It's, you know, it's kale and soups, as you
yeah.
said.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a minestrone kind of soup with kale in it instead of whatever else they put in it.
Yeah, something's not going right
yeah.
with my study.
There was recently a CBS Sunday Morning Show did a whole section about it, about it being, you know, a superfood and this and that.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan personally. I've grown it in my yard, actually just for aesthetic purposes.
But, looks pretty.
Yeah, it nice does. No, it's great, great looking plant.
Bring it over to your mother because she makes those kale chips. You know,
oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's good for. I just remember that it is good for me. Like, I don't know if it's one of those weird greens that has calcium in it or if it's just the other mix.
Well, it's a dark green leafy vegetable. It probably
but
has
I feel
all
like
sorts
it's special. Like, do you know how it's like some of them have special things, like mustard greens have different things from Swiss chard? I swear to God, it's true.
High in potassium.
So I feel,
or something.
Yeah. So I feel like kale's got some specialness that I don't remember.
Hmm.
Well, has it kind of jumped the shark? Is it peaking or is it starting
to? I think it's peaking.
I think it's more on the coasts than the Midwest, the popularity of it. It's certainly been written about in a lot of the national publications and, like I said, on the CBS Morning Show. But I think it's more coastal.
Yeah. It's probably going the way of cupcakes.
Doing sliders.
Research for the show, I ran across a headline that said cauliflower, the new kale.
Huffington Post, right? They declared that.
I think
yes.
it was. And I thought, well, wait a minute. Well, let's wait till kale
catches
kinda takes
on.
Hold
yeah.
before
15 minutes of fame.
Before we peek it out with the cauliflower. How is it that these foods take on this random popularity? Just out of nowhere.
Well, I think both kale and cauliflower are unique to most family dinner plates, I think. So if somebody kind of focuses on them and introduces you to them, you think all of a sudden, hey, this stuff isn't bad. Maybe we should do it more often.
Well, and the advent of celebrity chefhood, you know, if one of those guys or gals gets into it, you know, that's often a way that it kind of takes off. People have followings now, you know. Through Twitter and Facebook.
So in some of these cooking shows as well?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's often the way these kind of things get launched, and, you know, they kind of take on a life of their own from there. They go viral, so to speak.
You know, one I never got was quinoa. I never loved quinoa, and that was really big last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really healthy. It's a lot of protein, and it's not. Yeah,
but it also
spoils quickly.
Does it?
You can't keep it in the refrigerator for more than a couple of days.
What does it do? Grow stuff or taste off? Different things.
It gets rancid.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can store it when it's dry.
Yeah.
But after it's
not
cooked,
for a long time.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Lasts about a week. That's about it.
2928513 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking with Rich and Rich Terapak, who write for our food blog, Chefs in the City, along with Miriam Bowers Abbott, who is a restaurant reviewer for Columbus Underground. There are a lot of things going on. We just wrapped up the year. A lot of comings and goings. What strikes you?
Ooh. Well, what I'm noticing is a whole lot more restaurants are opening in the last month or two of the year than I had seen all year long. So Wolf's Ridge came on the scene. Mm-hmm. The Sycamore came on the screen. I was really busy. So it seems like Columbus is in the middle of opening a whole lot more restaurants.
Well, do you think that's an indication that the economy is picking up?
I think, there probably is. I think the people from Cleveland have figured out the economy is pretty good in Central Ohio. We've got like three new Cleveland restaurants.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and there's one from Toledo. So, it's known regionally as a pretty...
Wait, you have to name them because I don't know which
ones. We've got...
If you don't mind.
We have Melt. We have Bakersfield. What's the third?
Oh, that's a taco place, yes?
Yeah.
Bakersfield is it High and Buttles?
Right.
Michael Simon's...
B-Spot.
B-Spot, the burger joint out of Cleveland is also another
Michael
one.
Simon from The Chew.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and then what's the one from Toledo?
Bar 145?
Yeah.
And that's over Grandview. Grandview.
I knew it was a number. I couldn't come up with it. Columbus
Queens,
is a healthy
the
market.
Bear Burger.
We've got the best economy in Ohio, I think, right now.
And we're like the second or third fattest city, so we're good eaters, too.
Exactly. They know
just
we like to eat.
Yeah.
So we have
again?
Money and
yes,
we're fat.
Yes, we are. We're back on top.
Oh, no.
The economy is good and we like to eat.
2928513 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Mark is joining us from Upper Arlington. Good morning, Mark.
It's March. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Fine. I just want to tell you with the show, but I wanted to share a real quick anecdote about an experience that my family had in Boston. We were in 2007. I was diagnosed with cancer and spent about 8 months in the James. That's all taken care of now. Wonderful. But I got literally a week off at Christmas time to come home. And my wife had set something up with Chef Dornbach. We went over there and had dinner. They just treated us absolutely spectacularly and was one of the very few highlights of that entire period. And just we've continued to go back, love their food. But that's the one thing that we find in Columbus that we don't find other places. You can form a really good personal relationship with the chef or the staff of the restaurant. And I think, at least in my experience, that's really unique and something that's, I think, highly underrated in this city in terms of the kind of the ways you can get to know the people at the establishments. That's about it, and just want to thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And I think
it's very much in character for that couple.
That Chef Dornbach was making that point for him as well is that those relationships are very important to him. And he does come out from behind the kitchen and say hello to people. And I think that makes people feel very special.
That's the great thing about a market our size, as opposed to Chicago or New York. They may know the famous people who walk into their restaurant in those cities, but in a city like Columbus, it's small enough. People can get to know each other, and form relationships like that. And it's one of the most valuable parts of the experience of dining out, I think.
I think one of the reasons we do that first segment of the show is to introduce people to the chefs, so you get to know them, and it's usually a pretty interesting personal kind of story.
Well, and some chefs are like rock stars now, and they seem inaccessible, and when you just sit down at this table and have this conversation, it really does make them real live people.
Exactly.
2928513 if you'd like to join the conversation this morning. We're talking about food and restaurants with our reviewers, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, who write for our Chefs in the City blog, along with Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. And Jordan is joining us this morning. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I was wondering if anybody on the panel had some projected food trends, maybe specific to Ohio or even more specifically to Columbus for the upcoming year?
Kale.
And then cauliflower.
Let's see, what else?
I'm going to guess more things from raw food people. So, go big or go home. So I'll say something really random. So raw food is supposed to be really healthy for you. And
we're not talking just carrots here.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of unconventional raw things or things you conventionally see raw, but marketed as being a raw food. So that'll be my guess.
I think one thing I expect to see is more restaurants growing their own produce and herbs and vegetables and whatnot. Just with the cost of produce getting so high, there are a lot. It's already begun to some degree, but I think more and more you're going to see restaurants, with raised beds out in front of their, restaurants around their patios, growing their own vegetables, both in an effort to, be able to control the quality of their product, but also in an effort to save money.
Yeah, we see that at the Crest.
The Crest is one that's doing it now. Yeah.
Liz Lesner's brother grows herbs on the roof. Mm-hmm.
I think at Latitude 41
Latitude,
downtown, they're growing on the roof.
On the patio. So that's great because I think it tends to encourage the chefs to use a lot of these things and seasons things a little bit more
appropriately
and heavily and more unique, actually. So, maybe we'll see something beyond cilantro this year.
And I think at the top, don't they have a
yeah, they
garden
it's
somewhere?
Off-site. Craig has a farm, Craig Hoover, where they grow many of the vegetables they use as well.
And Black Creek Bistro grows all their stuff, yeah. So,
yeah, it's been happening at some places for a while. I think you'll continue to see it happen, mostly, if nothing else, for the rise in the cost of produce.
292-8513. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking about restaurants and food this morning on All Sides Weekend. And we're talking with our reviewers, Rich Terapak and his son Rich, or Rich Terapak and his father Rich, who write for our blog, Chefs in the City, along with Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground. We will take a quick break here and be right back. Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. Joining us this morning, reviewer Miriam Bowers Abbott of Columbus Underground, along with Rich Terapak and his son Rich, who write for our blog, Chefs in the City. We were talking about hot trends and all of that. There have been, as you mentioned, a number of new restaurants that have opened. Let's go through a couple of more. There's a little kind of grocery store diner downtown, a French...
Oh, I'm going to say it like a redneck. Chez du Bon. What is it?
Chez du Bon.
There you go. Okay. I ate there. Well, I ordered that way, too.
You had a pretty good review.
It made my top five list. I had a good time.
Great.
I like... One, I got obsessed with the quiche because it didn't taste like any quiche. I could go on for another 30 minutes. Will turn off my microphone. But I had never had a quiche that was that good.
The texture was made with Snowville dough.
Cream. It had to be
I
wouldn't even try to do it at home. I've never had one that is that texture was like the kind that you make everyone else at the table have. You try this. It's really no try.
Yeah.
Was that kind of a custard consistency?
Yeah, it wasn't. If I say it wasn't eggy at all, it's because it was so incredibly silky and mouth-filling. So that
probably
blew me away.
They do sell a Snowville creamery stuff in a counter or in a cabinet there.
Yeah, I couldn't make the same thing
happen. It's a restaurant and a market, just for those who haven't checked it out yet.
And right downtown.
Right downtown in the kind of in the bottom of the 5th-3rd building, direct entrance off of High Street, indirect off of State Street.
For those of you who remember City Center, it was once upon a time, you'd never guess from the way it looks now, a Wendy's.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, I remember it. I've been there.
This is brought to us by
the folks who took De Novo and also Manifesto.
Yvonne Barger? Is that right? Close to that, anyway. And I apologize to her because I can't quite pull up the last name. But she has De Novo and Manifesto. She's opening another place.
A jazz club,
jazz
downtown.
Club.
Downtown. No, they're...
And she's great at is sort of over-the-top decorating, so you'll get a kick out of the way the place looks as well.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful spot if you haven't been in. Also, the Croque Madame sandwich is terrific. Salmon rillettes were really good as well. So, yeah, it's certainly worth checking out. Yeah,
so what kind of groceries are available?
They do baguettes and also pre-made sandwiches to grab on the go. And then they also have some meats and cheeses and seafoods available.
And some wine.
To take home. Yeah. Wine. They also sell Café du Monde coffee in cans. And then, you know, several different dressings and whatnot. So, yeah, it's a market and a restaurant and kind of in separate spaces, but real neat place, big chandeliers, just, I mean, it's...
It's open for lunch downtown. Go ahead and get some onion soup on a day like this.
Yeah, the French onion soup was great.
And how about dinner?
I think it's about the same menu. Price points may be $2 or $3 higher at dinner time. I can't remember. But I think it's about the same menu. There's really... I mean, price points go from, you know, about $10 up to $22, I think.
Yeah, try the lamb tangine, which I thought was terrific.
We had steak, and I thought the portion was more generous than I expected from anything French, and that the treatment was almost dried steak quality, which is like the ultimate compliment for me. I think dried steaks are really good.
As so an
I
aged.
Was, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and this is Chez de Bon.
Chez de Bon.
At 3rd and...
It's at High End State.
Of close, but those cigars.
Again.
A block away. Yeah.
Think of the old Lazarus. Just walk across the street.
Exactly.
Speaking of the old Lazarus, Elizabeth Lesner is reopening the Chintz Room.
Hope she has the chicken salad recipe. That was the big thing for a long time at the Chintz Room.
There, she did talk about bringing back some of the old memorable favorites. I interviewed her a couple of weeks ago and was able to find an old Chintz Room menu, and I don't know what year it was from. There was nothing on the menu over $2 except for a steak.
Oh,
with salad and
good
potatoes.
Old days.
So obviously she's not going to be able to replicate the prices. But that could be a substantial space over there.
Yeah, everyone I know was excited about that. People who aren't normally excited about restaurants or normally don't talk to me about food, you know, were like, did you know it's coming back? And then they had some sort of association. You know, like when I was a little, usually it was women who had this conversation. So they would say, when I was a little girl, and then
Rich
would have,
says that all the time.
There's something like the hidden sandwich. Is that, I don't have a history.
You're right.
Like,
I don't remember. Like, oh, it was covered with salad.
That sounded cute.
Yeah.
And the Mexican beef.
Yeah. You know, it's great. And it's also great, this is going to be kind of sentimental, but it's also great that she announced that just about a month before Bob Lazarus died. It was probably the last Lazarus to run the place. So,
292-8513 if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking about restaurants this morning. Speaking of Elizabeth Lesner, it was just announced, I think yesterday in Business First and in the Dispatch, that she's going to be leaving the Short North, that Betty's is going downtown.
Apparently, it came down to there were just some issues with the landlord. You know, the rents in that area have gone up quite a bit. The HVAC wasn't particularly good. And I think more than anything, you know, she's all about sustainability. And apparently, I read something where the landlord wouldn't work with them on recycling, and they were having to truck all their recyclables.
Well, she owns the recycling.
Eartha, exactly. They were having to actually transport all of their recyclables over to Goodale Park to those recycling dumpsters over there. And obviously that probably got old after a while. So I think it was a combination of things. I mean, they had a great run in that spot. That was their first place. Now it's going to be down on Gay Street, not kind of in the strip you'd think of where, you know, Due Amici and Tip Top are, but a little further down near Grant East, just around the corner from her grass skirt Tiki Lounge.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it'll do great down there.
I mean,
yeah, exactly. They're, you know, they're all about developing neighborhoods as well. And I mean, that area around CCAD and everything down there is,
it
and Columbus State is
then
coming up. Yep. And, you know, I think this is a natural progression for them. It's a loss for the Short North, but I'm sure, you know, somebody will come in down there because somebody always does.
Yeah.
And she's got another Dirty Franks, I think, opening in Westgate, along with the Tap Room in Franklinton. Speaking of.
I've heard of each of those. Also, I think there's a place called the Torpedo Room in the
Gateway.
In the Gateway Film and the
arena.
Movie theater in the arena. Or is it
it's not Gateway.
The Gateway on campus, arena. Not the arena.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's keeping busy for sure.
And of course there are a number of other new restaurants opening up. The Coop, I think somebody mentioned
food truck. And they also do weekends at, what's the place across the street from Skillet? Somebody help me. It's an old dive bar.
Wow.
The Hi-ho,
hey-ho.
Hey-hey. Shoot us, guys. Anyway, it's there on Whittier, and they cook on the weekends on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday there, and they're opening their own restaurant in Clintonville.
Okay. And speaking of new places, I actually just this morning got a chance to stop in at C'est Si Bon, which is a new creperie in Bexley on Main Street, just across the street from Capital University. Great stuff. They've got about 30 different crepes, about 20 savory, 10 sweet, French press coffee. It's a small space, just a couple doors down from the Drexel Theater, but I would highly recommend getting in there if you get a chance.
So crepes are back.
Apparently, yeah. It was a fad several years ago, but crepes never get old. I mean, crepes are fantastic, and I'm thrilled to have it four blocks from my house.
And it's great to have another crepe place. We got the one in the North Market, but that's been about it.
Mm-hmm. So, no, it's yeah, many cities have dozens of them, yeah. So this is a great addition. This place actually used to be in Canal Winchester, in Old Canal, but I think it was just not as much foot traffic as they were hoping to see. And so they've been at this for a couple years now. I spoke to the owner, and I wish them all the best. I think it's going to do very well in Bexley.
And we did get an email from Lynn who says that Lucky's Market has a kale Brussels sprout salad that's great.
It's in the lead right now. That is the place that I found two at, and that is my number. I'm still looking for more to go up against it, but I couldn't agree more.
So cranberries, almonds, Parmesan, and more?
Yes, yes, that is the one. It was really good. I'm still looking for more places, but it is, she has some good taste.
2928513, and Steve is joining us from Columbus. Go ahead.
Yes. Has anyone heard from the Grumpy Gourmet lately?
Yeah, we see him every once in a while. He's still kicking and he's still grumpy. I saw him over Thanksgiving weekend, he's as ornery as ever.
Okay.
Well, he's grumpy even when he's happy.
He has a great, sarcastic, cynical sense of humor that's walking. Brag a little bit. We're having lunch at Hanky's, and he ate something what the first course was, the usual kind of foie gras kind of thing. And he said, I'd even pay for this.
How nice. Invite him on the show sometime.
Well, we'll consider that. Thanks so much for your idea.
Thank you.
And speaking of Hanky's, it was that has reopened now as another new spot.
Jack Whitney's.
Whitney's, yeah.
Yeah, run by the Fresno people, who just, I think.
Kevin and Fresno about 4 months ago or something.
And have decided to take a little vacation on the Fresno spot. So they're busy.
Yeah, it's just the upstairs, kind of the bar area that's going to be reopened. They're going to use the cellar area for private parties and whatnot, but that's a lot of restaurant to fill.
It sure is.
So it makes sense that they're.
And that bar area upstairs is really nice.
Oh, yeah, it's neat. Yeah. It's just a little bit below ground level. Real neat place. Great old historic building. So
what kind of menu are they?
I was told it's similar to that of Fresno. So if you've ever been there.
Yeah, it was like a lot of sandwiches. And I'm trying to remember better, but it feels like a Cheers bar. I mean, it feels a lot like McClaskey's. Am I pronouncing it
wrong?
A lot like McClaskey's did, only with Fresno there.
Yeah.
292-8513, or you can email us at wosu.org/allsides. And Jerry is joining us.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. Yes, Gooseneck Tavern in Powell had the best sauerbraten, which they don't make regularly. But the only sauerbraten I ever had that was better was my late wife's, who was from Bavaria and knew how to make it. The other restaurant in Powell, I can't think of the second name. Local? Can anybody help me?
Roots?
Local?
Roots.
No, not Greek. Local? What'd you say?
Roots. R.
Roots. That's it. Roots. Fantastic. Yeah. Had one of the best New York strips I've had in years. Done with hardly any gristle on it. Served with potatoes, and I should have asked the waiter how they did the spinach because it was fantastic. And I've eaten spinach since I used to watch Popeye cartoons 75 years ago.
That's great.
But have any of you eaten at local Roots?
Have not. I want to recommend, though, that it's only done in this season. Chef Hubert at Spaggio's does sauerbraten. He's also from Bavaria, so you might enjoy that. So.
That's Spaggio's. Where is that at?
In Grandview, Grandview Avenue, yeah.
I live way up northwest, and like the song went during the war, I don't get around much anymore, but I try to. But local Roots, thank you. I don't know why I couldn't remember that, but the second thing that goes when you get older is your memory. Don't ask me what the first is. Thanks for taking the call. Have a wonderful day, folks.
Thanks so much for your call, Jerry. 292-8513, and Carol Lee is on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, you?
Fine. I'm calling about Helen's Kitchen, a place that I've discovered is at 161 and I-71. They've been there for about a year, but one of the things that I have discovered is Chinese. You walk in, you don't think it's anything remarkable, but then when you ask for the traditional menu, the whole world breaks loose. And it is fantastic. The other thing is the chef sings opera at the Grand Prix piano from time to time. It's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, sounds great.
That's funny. I've been there and I've seen the great big piano in the front, and it didn't occur to me that there might be singing by the chef. That would be a good birthday place if you could get someone to do that for you.
The other thing is Helen is really good about explaining all those things that are on their traditional menu, which is in English as well as Chinese. And she's just marvelous. So, you know, I asked whether they would be interested in anybody else who sang, who could come and play the piano, just as a guest, as they're eating dinner. And she said, oh, that would be so delightful. They'd love it. So there's a whole new possibility opening up for them. And just thought you guys would like to know about it, maybe check it out.
And this is called Helen's at 161 and 71?
Mm-hmm. It's tucked back near the Giant Eagle. Grocery store back in there.
It used to be a strip bar, so it's all mirrored.
It used to be a strip bar. That's it.
So is that on the east side of 71?
No.
West side. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I meant. Thank you.
Northwest.
Okay.
And it's right behind Waffle House. I mean, it looks very innocuous, but it's wonderful.
No, that's good to know.
I want to ask you a quick question. I also have seen that Vern's 161 is open, and I was just wondering if anyone has gone over there yet to check out the dining. Mm-mm.
Not.
Nope. Or East Siders, and like the prior caller, don't get around much anymore. No. we'll try to get there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call this morning. There are a couple of new restaurants as well in the Short North. Have we talked about Melt?
Did we talk about Melt?
We may have
mentioned it last time. I've been there. It's one of the recent arrivals from Cleveland. It's a big restaurant. It has huge portions. If you want a cheat day from any diet, go there. There's a lot of stuff that's deep fried. Mammoth portions, 125 seats, but so far very difficult to get into. It's become a big hit. Son and brother Brad was there yesterday and had a great time.
Yeah, he said the food was terrific. He said service was a little lacking. That could just be the crowds they're getting right now.
Yeah, he's become a food critic.
Yeah,
as well, I guess.
Yeah, but that's what he said to me. He said he loved the food, but he said the service was lacking.
Yeah.
So this is in a new building called The Hub, at Hubbard and High.
Right. It's on the east side of the street in that new building.
Yeah. And Bakersfield has opened. I think we mentioned
that's
it.
That's the Black Olives. Black Olives.
And this is a tequila taco kind of place?
We've got a description of it here someplace. The other place I wanted to mention real quickly, and I hope he gets it open soon, is Magdiel Walmark is doing a Jewish deli next to Till.
And this is Ozzie and Moe's.
Yeah, Ozzie and Moe. So I don't think it's open yet. It'd be great to.
Well, I think I read somewhere that's slated to open in the spring, and it's going to be a pop-up donut store on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
So he's busy.
Perfect.
Yeah. Great time.
There is one neat thing starting up at the North Market in 2014, which is their new cooking school. the Academy, as it's called. They're going to do demonstration-only classes with many of the city's best chefs. The first one I know is with David Tetzloff of G. Michael's. That's on January 8th. It's multi-course dinner with wine pairing, $50 a person. Should be neat. I can't wait to go check one out.
Bakersfield does specialize in tacos, tequila, and whiskey.
Well, who needs more than that?
Happy New Year.
Thanks to everybody who joined us this morning. Rich Terapak, his son Rich, who write reviews for our Chefs in the City blog, along with Miriam Bowers Abbott, food reviewer for Columbus Underground. And thanks to Chef John Dornbach of Bazzi Italia, who joined us earlier in the program. I'm Marilyn Smith. We'll be back with another food-centered show coming up in February. Oh, my gosh.